Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and I am my own guest today, but you've got quite a few very good YouTubes to listen to. And my topic is keep dancing. I actually wanted to dedicate this to two people that I feel really deserve it. The one, of course, is Edith Eger, who passed away in April this year, and at the age of 98, a Holocaust survivor, and a psychiatrist, an incredible woman, author of the books The Choice, The Gift, and The Ballerina of Auschwitz, and also to Noam Bitan, who represented Israel at the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest in Vienna, Austria. Now, I'm sure you all were listening in to him over the weekend. And, you know, on Sunday night, he came second in it, which was absolutely amazing. But why I have connected the two of them together is because Noam Bitan, who won the Israeli singing competition, drew deeply on Edith Eger's messages of resilience and choosing hope in the face of adversity. He often apparently spoke about her teachings as personal inspiration, and especially while competing under international spotlight. If you had seen what was going on with the boos and the shots and negativity that was really being directed at him as he was singing, and he sang his heart out with such unbelievable courage, I was incredibly proud of him. And he said that Edith Eger's passing, before his actual program, he said he felt that he had to honor her legacy, the legacy of inner freedom, especially alongside the ongoing Israeli Eurovision campaign, the campaign to try to stop Israel from being in the Eurovision. And it was a very emotional performance of his, and I wondered where he had got his courage from. But obviously, he is a very courageous man anyway, young man anyway. I think all of us were definitely voting him in and very, very proud that he was there. He said that he heard the boos and boos and he couldn't believe it. And for a moment, he had to catch his breath. And then he saw a few flags in the audience, Israeli flags, and he said, and that gave him the courage to go on. Now, Edith Eger, on the other hand, she was born in September in 1927 and into a Jewish family in Czechoslovakia. She was a ballet dancer, and she was even a member of the Hungarian Olympic team. But obviously, she was removed from that because of anti-Jewish laws. Thank you.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
You're about to listen to two audio clips. The first one is Rabbi Sachs on Edith Eger.
Kept each other alive, and we were liberated May 4th, 1945.
You know, this year will be 80 years since your liberation. You've lived 80 years of life after that.
Look how lucky. I think it's very good to relive what happened, but don't stay there. Mm-hmm. Don't just go through it. and recognize that you had a choice to just let go. Thank God you chose anything that you chose, because it got you here now. I have 3 children, I have 5 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandsons. And that's a good revenge to Hitler.
Edith Eger went through Auschwitz, survived the death march, eventually moved to America, became a psychoanalyst, used all the pain in her life to heal the pain of others, and then wrote her first book at the age of 90 and became a bestseller. And it's a life-affirming book. And that is the meaning of the name of the book, The Choice. Will you or won't you see yourself as a victim?
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. If you would like to send any messages through, please WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Now, what I was thinking about with Edith Eger and the what she can teach us at the moment, if you listen to any of the news at the moment, you will be shocked at the anti-Semitism that is there. And yet there's so much else that's going on that we need to cling on to. And, you know, Nietzsche viewed chaos as a vital source of creativity. He said it was transformative and that it added individual brilliance. He said that inner turmoil and disorder are necessary to create greatness. Now, I mean, how amazing. So his famous quote was, one must still have chaos in himself to be able to give birth to a dancing star. And that was one of his best quotes, apparently. You must have chaos within you to give birth to a dancing star. Now, what does this mean? It means that within us, our inner turmoil, we have to break through this. And is that easy? It never is easy. It takes unbelievable courage to break through that. And he suggested that there were different beliefs on chaos. Nietzsche believed that true innovation cannot emerge from an over-controlled life. Now, that I found very interesting, because if you think about the school curriculum and how they teach children, it's a very strict way of following rules. This is exactly how you do it. There's very little individuality in our education. And he said that if it's too rigid, over-controlled, there's no creativity and growth. And then he talks about the dancing star, which he said represents a brilliant creative achievement or a liberated individual who is born out of this inner struggle. And if we look at the people coming out of the Holocaust, the Shoah, the women who have come out, and we see that, we just see that inner struggle, but look at their brilliance that has been born because of it. I was listening to a woman of 94, a Holocaust survivor, and she said when she was given her first baby, she held her baby and she just started to cry and cry and cry when they handed the baby to her. And she said she cried for 4 hours. They kept coming in and saying, no, they must take the baby away from her if she was going to behave like that. And he kept saying, no, you're not taking the baby anywhere. And she said, she just held on to the baby. What they didn't realize is that she, through her baby, she knew that she had lived. She had lived in the darkest, darkest times of her own life and of history. And yet her new life had come forward and she had birthed that life. And she gave thanks to Hashem, to God, for that. but wouldn't let the baby go. She went on to lead an incredible life, but tried to shield her children from her past until eventually, like Edith Eger, she came to the conclusion that she had to come through with the story. I was once in a concentration camp with the March of the Living, and a man came up to me. We were about to go in and walk through the concentration camp. It was Belzec. And Belzec has just got one area that you go into, and it's got all, you go down a long, long, really terrible tunnel until you come to this, like a wall of remembrance of all the names. And they're just these huge rocks everywhere, black rocks, and obviously burnt rocks. Anyway, a man suddenly came up to me, an elderly man, and he said, "Can he walk with me?" And I said, "Yes, sure." And I thought that's strange because his family was there as well. But he left the family and he came and walked with me. And he said, "Can he tell me his story?" And of course, I said I would be honored to hear his story. Well, it was a story of such deep pain. And his family were walking one step behind us, listening to every single word that he was talking about. And afterwards, and he told me all the details of what he had gone through. His entire family had been lost at Belzec, and his own survivor guilt at living. And the only reason why he had come on this march was because his grandchild had asked if he would come as a Holocaust survivor on the march she was going from her school. And afterwards, when we got to the, I realized, you know, that his family hadn't heard what he had been talking about before, because they were really hanging on every word that he said. And it wasn't like he was speaking quietly. It was almost as though I had to be his conduit, that through me, his family could hear his story. I think it was safer for him to see me giving that, being given his story. And I was greatly honored to do so. When we came up to the wall, he leant his head against the wall. And as he leant against his head against the names of all his people, I stepped aside and I let his family wrap their arms around him.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson, and we're going to be listening to an audio clip now, and it's by Edith Eger. I hope you enjoy it.
I look at Auschwitz as an opportunity for me to discover my inner resources. If you touch your guard, God forbid, you were shot right away. If you touch the barbed wire, you were electrocuted. And I saw the blue bodies. So I learned not to fight and not to flee, but learn how to flow and stay in the situation and say to myself, I don't like it. It's inconvenient and it's temporary and I can survive it. When they took my blood, I asked, why do you take my blood? And he said, to aid the German soldiers so we can win the war. And I said to myself, with my blood, you're never gonna win the war. I still had a way for me to respond and not to allow anything or anyone to change my thinking, my feeling, and my behavior, because everything is temporary. There is something between birth and death called life, the faith, that somehow I don't have to like it. It's inconvenient, it's very uncomfortable, and it's temporary. And I said to myself, if I survive today, then tomorrow I'll be free. Tomorrow was such an important way for me to know that this is temporary. This is why I survived, to be able to guide others, to be survivors and never a victim. I'm not a victim. It's not my identity. It's what was done to me. So the question is, what are you holding on to and what are you willing to let go of?
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. If you have any questions or if you want to comment, please do so on 061-895-1019. You're listening to High FM 101.9. Now, that was Edith Eger that you were listening to, and about how she survived Auschwitz. And she said that forgiveness first requires rage. And she wasn't talking about forgiving of what had been done to her. She said she was not a victim. I was victimized, she said. And in many of her YouTubes and her audio clips, you'll hear her talking about forgiveness requiring rage. And she speaks about people who have been abused and how they need to go through that rage first, because that rage is necessary. How dare people behave like that? And she also spoke eventually about her cherished wound. She said that she had to get in touch with what was her motivation for going on. And eventually, it was initially her family. But when she came to the realization that she needed to tell about her past and talk about it, which was many, many years later, that's when she looked into it and she herself became a therapist. And she called it her cherished wound, that it was part of what was left of her life. And part of her was left in Auschwitz, never to be retrieved, but that she could work on the wounds that it had caused. Now, I was telling you about the man that came up to me, a Holocaust survivor, came up to me at Belzec concentration camp. And I ended by saying, just before going to ad break, that as we got to the wall, there was all the hundreds and thousands of names written in marble. And he found his family's names and he put his head against them. And I put my arm around him for one moment. And then I stepped back because I felt this was a time for his family to step forward and to break the pattern of silence that he had brought into his family, and that they had all been walking around that silence his whole life. So they all came up. It was so emotional to see. I must admit, that's when I cried. When I stepped away, my daughter Shira and I both cried, because there was this family with their arms around the father and the grandfather and just holding him in his pain. And they were all sobbing too. As we moved on, he caught up with me again. He literally said, "Wait up, wait up." Anyway, I did wait up for him. And his family this time, instead of staying a feet or two behind us, they stepped up and walked with us. And I was able to ask him different questions about his time as a father, as a grandfather, what it had meant to him. Surviving the camps, that he was able to bring this beautiful family in, and that now he was passing on history and being able to share it with his granddaughter, who very obviously believed that her grandfather could do this, otherwise she would never have asked him. And when I asked the granddaughter, "Why did you ask your Zayda to come with you?" she said, "I wanted to hear the story from him, but I also wanted him to be able to tell the story." So it worked both ways, both generations. It was very wonderful to see. Anyway, so, you know, going back to our future generations, if we at the moment turn on any news, whether it's CNN or whatever it is, we are hearing unbelievable negativity. Every single day there's another attack on Jews. Well, are we going to just live with that? Are we going to stop that from, are we going to allow that to stop us living in our own light? No, we are not. You know, there's a quote, dance to the music of your soul. Serenity is not freedom from the storm. And that is true. We are being asked to find peace within the storm, within the turmoil, the noise and the fear. Just as that young, our young singer in the Eurovision contest, Noam Bitan, did. He went on and he sang really from his heart and soul. And the dancers with him also put everything into it. So dance to the music of your soul. And serenity is not freedom from the storm. And I can attest to that. I have gone through my own challenge for the last few weeks. Thank God it's not something that is anything like anybody else. But I had to come off a medication that was suddenly removed from the South African market, no warning, and I have had unbelievable withdrawal symptoms, so much so that I actually haven't even been driving for the last few weeks, and my poor car, I've had to call the AA today to come and make sure that the battery's charged because it was flat. Anyway, but, you know, I realized that I had a choice. I could go to bed and stay there, or I could get up and get on. And you know what? There's a Rabbi Nachman said, keep showing up, keep getting up, and keep looking up. One day you'll thank yourself for never giving up. And to tell you the truth, I was tested in the last few weeks. My daughter and her family were here from Israel. Wonderful visit with her baby. Oh my gosh, the energy that a baby brings into life. And this little boy, he just looked at me. He was used to seeing me on a camera, on a phone, a cell phone. That's how small I was. When he suddenly saw the size of me, he kind of stared for a minute. As they arrived, he stared at me, and then suddenly he actually smiled. And oh my word, that smile just melted my heart. So my daughter, thank goodness it didn't, my own withdrawal symptoms didn't start until the last week that they were here. They are now home, fortunately. And I was pushed to think about Richard Quest, you know, on CNN. I know many people find him very irritating. I find him very amusing. And he says, we ain't done yet. And then he gets on and he goes off whatever really odd prank he's doing, off he goes. But he says, enjoy the moment. And I think that's what we're all being asked to do at the moment, to enjoy the moment. What are we going to be doing with this time? When we look back, you know, we've been through the COVID. We've been through many times that many people might have given up even in COVID, but there's something that in our lives that calls us to respond. And I think that is when I really do look back on Viktor Frankl, being a logotherapist myself. I do look back on his wisdom and look to see what is it that life is calling us to do now. Then, you know, the NASA astronaut Reed Weissman, or Wiseman, I'm not sure how you would pronounce it, but he was asked about his trip, and he said he's not a religious man. It was on the Artemis II astronaut, and he was asked, and he asked for before they had really gone through a lot of. They were going through all the tests coming back to Earth. But he asked for a Navy chaplain to visit them. And because he said that when the sun eclipsed beyond the moon, there was just no way to explain what he was seeing. And he said to the fellow astronauts, I don't think humankind has elevated enough to understand what we are seeing. He said he was so profoundly impacted by a celestial event in space that's why he sought out a Navy chaplain. He was overcome with emotion when the chaplain walked in and he saw a cross on the chaplain's neck. And he said he's not a religious man himself, but he was just so emotional when he saw that. And he said that his experience shared with his fellow astronaut, Victor Glover, reveals how truly otherworldly God's creation is. He said it's humbling even the most scientifically advanced. And to the article that I was reading about him, it says, this powerful encounter showcases how God's magnificent artistry can awaken a deep spiritual understanding in anyone. Now, I know many of you will say, you know, how can we even believe in God? But I don't think that's the question. I think, let's look at creation and let's see the beauty of creation. And in that alone, we see something greater that's beyond us, beyond our own understanding, which I think is worth looking into. And we do have this responsibility to our future generations. My Israeli grandchildren spoke a lot to me. My little grandchild, especially granddaughter of 8, needed to talk about the trauma that they have all gone through. And, you know, what the school has said about it. And what warmed my heart is that nowhere did she talk about hate. Nowhere did she talk about revenge. On the contrary, she just said one day maybe it will be over and things will be different. And, you know, that's all I could give to her, that's what you've got to hold on to, that there will be different. This doesn't always remain like it is. But we do have the responsibility to our future generations to consider what we are leaving them. Are we leaving them with our wounds or our wisdom, wisdom which is often forged in the darker times? Or are we leaving them with hatred for mankind, anyone who's slightly different to them? No, we're not. We're going to leave them with the wisdom that we gain in our own lives and in moving forward. On Mother's Day, Mari Sukers and I were very honored to be talking. Well, actually, I was more just questioning Mari. Mari was on Zoom at New Beginnings with Jesse Kay organized. And one of the things that I read to them was this, which I loved. It said, while an entire nation scans the skies, searching for signs of threat, the true story of strength is written on the ground. It's the stories of who we are. On the night of intense operations in the South, while jets thundered into the darkness, Major General Tome Bar, who was the commander of the Israeli Air Force, made an unannounced visit, not to the pilots, but to the technical teams working behind the scenes. He stopped beside a young soldier who was covered in grease. His eyes were very, very heavy from days without any rest, running on empty. And the major general said to him, "When did you last talk to your mother?" And the soldier admitted, 3 days ago. At that moment, Bard took out his phone, dialed the number and said, "Hello, this is Tome Bard speaking. I'm here with your son. I want you to know that he is our true hero. And thanks to him, our skies are all safe. He simply did not have time to call because he was busy saving the country." He handed over the phone to the young soldier and he stepped aside. Before leaving, he gave the squadron commander an order. "Our technology is the best in the world, but these people are the engine. Make sure everyone here gets a hug and a phone call home. That's an order." Now, goes on to say, this is what Jewish leadership looks like. to see not just missions, but people, not just outcomes, but hearts. The strength of Israel is not only in its firepower, but in the humanity it refuses to lose. It's our turn to show our humanity. Isn't that a beautiful story of recognizing a mother? That I read out on Mother's Day, which was beautiful. Are you looking to reach an engaged, loyal audience? There is no better place to do it than right here on Chai FM. Our listeners tune in every day for music, conversation, and news that they can trust. When you advertise on Chai FM, you're not just buying airtime, you are becoming part of a community that genuinely listens. Whether you are a small business or an established brand, we'd love to have a conversation about how we can work together. WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. Our email, or you can email us at info@chaifm.com, and we'll reach out to you. Chai FM, part of your day, every day.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and you're about to listen to an audio clip, and it's with Rachel Goldberg-Pollen and John Pollen.
I think Israelis after October 7th were the recipients of real divine, profound holding, scaffolding from you. And now with what's happening, at some point there was a pivot, there has been a turn, and now you are going through things that we don't know about, that we don't understand. And I really think that we need to find, how do we now give that to you? There's 8 billion people in the world. Billion, that's with a B. We're 15 million. What are we doing here? How? How are we even still here? It makes no sense. And therefore, our inner superpower is that we do create this sense of unity and hope and beauty. And I feel for you. And I'm so sorry, because you've been here for me and I want to be here for you. And I don't know what that looks like, but I am here and I will be here.
Everywhere we've been, we have heard that anthem that was kind of one of the anthems of the hostage supporters, which was Atem lo levad anachnu itchem, you are not alone, we are with you. And while it was coming at us, I think that, as Rachel said, it definitely goes in circles. I think that the best thing that we could probably all do is be prouder, be more confident, and think more about how to thrive within who we are as a community. And if others see that and want to accept it, that's great. And if they don't, the reality is, for roughly 3,900 of our 4,000 years as a people, we've known how to live when we all just support each other and find the beauty in our heritage and what we're doing. So much of the meaning and purpose and strength that we all aspire for is right in front of us and right around us. And that's what I want to spend time on.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and you are listening to Rachel Goldberg-Pollen and John Pollen. And I think they were absolutely amazing. For those of you who don't know, perhaps those of you who do know but just need a reminder, Hirsch was taken hostage and held throughout the entire time. He was injured, his arm was blown off, and he certainly didn't receive any medical clinic, but any medical help while in Gaza. And he was very badly treated. But a few of the hostages who have come back have been able to contact his parents to tell them that how they survived because of Hirsch, even though Hirsch himself never came out alive. And Hirsch's parents never, ever gave up fighting for him to live. And I found it very interesting what how his dad ended by saying that we've got to look at what's all around us. Who are there for us? We've got to look at community. We've got to reconnect with one another and give each other strength in this time. It is very frightening. I know a lot of my own grandchildren are going through issues of anti-Semitism. And it shocks me. My father told me many, many, many years ago, after he had gone through Bergen-Belsen after the war, and he said anti-Semitism will never die. It will always be here. And I remember being shocked that he even thought that way. But he is right. So what do we do in a time when anti-Semitism is rife again? How do we live? How do we live? We live to care for one another. My one granddaughter goes to do different, and her friends, they go to some of the poorest hospitals, handing out clothing for the new babies, handing out stuff. It's a special program that is run by their school. And they go and they get in touch with people who are far needier than, thank God, we will ever be. What does it do? It teaches them compassion. They love seeing the little babies. They love being able to talk to the mothers. And my granddaughter was telling me about this tiny little baby. She said the smallest that she'd ever seen. And I thought it must be in a incubator, but actually, no, the mother was holding it. And, you know, I'm so happy that my children, my grandchildren are getting to experience that it's not all just about being who we are as Jews or white South Africans. As white South Africans, we have come through a backdrop, a historic time that our children will never know, our grandchildren will never know. But it's for us to make sure that we don't teach them the hatred that occurred then in apartheid South Africa, that everybody has a right to life, that everybody has a life to a right to get on with one another and not be completely swayed by what the media is telling us all the time. I saw something very interesting about the moral compass that is wrong in the media at the moment, and how the world storytellers choose convenience over truth. How we actually need to make decisions ourselves. We need to get more informed about what's happening around us. And Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi, on his press conference in Berlin, said not a single one of the 150 journalists asked me a question about the 40,000 Iranians slaughtered on the streets of my country on January the 8th and 9th. When I told them that there were 20 political prisoners currently sentenced to death, not a single one of the 150 journalists asked me a thing about them. So that's when we've got to understand that the world storytellers are morally bankrupt and they have lost their moral compass, definitely. 56 years and going strong. The Kollel Bookshop has its annual sale from the 31st of May to the 8th of June inclusive. Prices from 25% to 30% off on virtually all stock. Buy from displaced stock at never to be repeated prices. Place and pay for specials inclusive of delivery. See you from the 31st of May to the 8th of June at the Kollel Bookshop. Kollel, I will certainly be there. I love their books.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and our time is running out very quickly, but I needed to tell you the one story. And, you know, Plato said, those who tell the stories rule society. So So I must admit that the stories that come out about the Holocaust, that are coming out about hostage mothers and fathers and how they're coping, the stories coming out from the hostages themselves are absolutely remarkable. But this particular came from Jewish mothers in the Holocaust, and it said, there are no words to describe their valor, only prayers. And it said, it was a time unimaginable, unthinkable, a time incomprehensible to any mother or to any human. And sitting here so long later, we still hear the echoes of these mothers. This particular story was about protecting their children, how the mothers went out of their way to protect their children. There were no greater heroes than these Jewish mothers. And this one, when the Nazis rounded up the Jews of Piatrico for deportation, Yisrael was aged 4. He was supposed to accompany his mom, Chaya, to Ravensbrück. This was Himmler's notorious women's camp, where death by starvation, beating, torture, hanging, shooting, and medical experiments were part of the grotesquerie of daily life. Chaya pushed her little boy away, allowing his older brother, bound for Buchenwald, a safer camp, could stash Yisrael in a duffel bag, where she believed he would have a better chance of survival. The mother Chaya didn't survive, but her son grew up to carry on the 38th generation of rabbis, becoming chief rabbi of Israel and one of the most revered Jews in the world, Yisrael Meir Lau. And in the book, Jewish Responses to Nazi Persecution, written by Isaiah Trunk, we see the following testimony from a Jewish mother about to be taken to a concentration camp. And she said, "Bronia, I beg you, take care of my son. Be a mother to him. I'm afraid he'll catch cold. He's so weak and sickly. And may God protect you both, even as my tears have dried up." And there you are. I mean, look at that. A mother who was prepared to put her little boy, and Rabbi Lau often tells the story of how he came out in a duffel bag. So life lives on. Judaism lives on. We have to celebrate who we are, work together to become the strongest people we can possibly become. Is strong, when I say strong, I mean emotionally strong. Care for others, care for one another. And thank you, Craig, so much. Thank you, Vusi, and thank you, Makundi. You will be listening to a song at the end, and I'm just trying to remember what it was called. I think it's called You Will Be Found by Ben Platt. Thank you so much, Craig.